Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. About 10 minutes to the top of the hour. And you've heard Jonathan Thomas over the years, no matter what he has been doing. When he was working at Bridlewood, putting in effort to start his own stable and the various elements of the business, helping clients either buy horses and sell horses, prepare horses, and all of the work that goes into a career in the sport crystallized for Jonathan on Saturday. Certainly ahead of that, but when you win a race like the Travers, it really defines a career at a certain point. And undoubtedly, the just cascading of compliments and the show of support and delight from all over the place at Jonathan Thomas's success with Catholic Boy and the win number 6 for Javier Castellano in the race and for Bob LaPenta, who has won a lot of big races but coveted this. Everybody involved in this win, and it all started with Jonathan Thomas. It all goes through Jonathan Thomas, who joins us now. Jonathan, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
It's 24 hours later now, and this is one of those things that you react to in the moment, and you know, then with each passing hour and getting back to work and the next day's entries and whatever it is, the Tilly's Lily yesterday in the stake, you have more time to reflect on what has transpired and the enormity of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, now that, you know, the emotions have settled a little bit, and you know, it's been an awesome outpouring of from people, and you know, I've heard some great stories from some people, just you know, about the horse, and you know, either if they're $2 bettors or you know, knew him when he was younger, and just a lot of you know, my peers, trainers, and owners, and It's been just an amazing experience from for a lot of various reasons. One of those things that we all kind of set our sights on to accomplish in a career, and you know, we got very fortunate that it's happened to us early, but the enormity of the whole thing is not lost on us.
When it came to achieving what was achieved on Saturday, there's every juncture of the story. I mean, you did everything except for breed the horse.
No, we were lucky. We were put in a position to purchase some horses for Mr. LaPenta, and he was one of the first of a group we bought, small sample size. And you know, as a horseman, I enjoy numerous facets of this industry, and done well with this horse on multiple levels feels very gratifying as a horseman. And you know, he's been in our program a long time, so we've also had multiple times that we could have messed up. And you know, it's just a credit to my whole team, because we've got a team from the early starting of a horse under tack all the way to the really formal training of the racetrack. And there's a lot of hands that have been on this horse, and a lot of hands that have done the right thing. So I'm very blessed.
We have for years here been fans of what Fred Hertrick and John Fielding do as breeders. And of course, Watercress Farm in Kentucky, this is yet another Hertrick Fielding production on the breeding side. And we'll get to that later in the week, certainly. When it came to picking the horse out and moving forward, talk about his development, and then we can morph into some of the challenges, Jonathan, that came your way earlier this spring.
Just getting to Mr. Hertrick and Mr. Fielding, they deserve an immense amount of respect for what they've done this year as breeders, because between Diversify, Catholic Boy, Rushing Fall, I mean, not only, have they had an amazing year, they've had an amazing Saratoga. I don't know, if anyone's done what they've done. I mean, when you go all the way from, the Judmonts of the world to, the biggest places in America, I mean, they deserve a lot of respect, and they're fantastic guys. I've gotten to know them a little bit through this horse, and, every encounter I've had with them has been, one I always take away and I'm happy I've had. So those guys have done amazing. And I think now, to make things easier at the sales, we're just going to buy everything they breed. and just go that route. But, he was a young athlete that had all the right angles and kind of the right mechanics that we look for in a horse. The intangible of the desire and the kind of the want to inside, those are things that we can't predict, but we always start with the horse that we think has good action and has the ability to stay sound, or at least try to. So he checked off all those boxes, and in a short summary, I mean, he's a horse we were very patient with. We let him kind of come to hand. Every race he ran in was something that he kind of took us towards, not vice versa, trying to rush him in any spots. This early part of the winter, or later part of the winter, rather, I'm not so sure looking back that this horse wasn't going through a pretty good growth curve, and maybe wasn't at his complete best, as much for maturation reasons and just growing and developing, as opposed to any other external factors.
Interesting. And as you got to the races with him and the whole equation, fold in the breeding and confirmation and action in how you felt about turf versus dirt, and you've been confident throughout about his interchangeability and the fact that wherever you were going to go with him, he would acquit himself.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to define it back, but when I was growing up, we dealt a lot with like steeplechase horses and show horses and fox hunters, and you know, and at a lower level, racehorses. And, you know, the one theme I always saw with the upper tier horses or the ones that succeeded were athletes, you know, and horses that just have good athletic components. And that's the one similarity, you know, across the horse spectrum at the top level is they're all very good athletes. They move well. Things come easier to them because they're using less energy with their bodies. You know, they just are more efficient. You know, so to me, the fact that he's got that duality on both surfaces is much, you know, because of how he moves. He's just a really clean, efficient moving horse, and, you know, it translates to both surfaces, thankfully. And listen, maybe it's a hybrid of his pedigree. You know, he's more than ready out of a Bernardini mare with, you know, seeking the gold on the bottom. And then actually when you dig really deep, you know, the horse had some kind of profound horses routing on the turf. You know, so maybe it's a combination of things.
When you give everybody a lesson on this, and I've heard so many different things from every different kind of horseman and from breeders, the physical makeup, the whether it's pastern and hoof and just all the things that go into, you know, how a horse travels, your personal guide to, you know, what makes a horse get over turf in particular, when you look at them and you're adjusting for a client's needs.
I mean, I'm a big fan of a really clean neck on a horse, you know, with some length, because really a horse's dry length is equal to that of its neck length, or really where its nose is as far as their front feet can extend. So, you know, that's as far as they're going to go. So a horse with a short neck. Now, look, if it's a short-necked horse, it's very clean, and it's out of a, you know, a very quick family, you know, sprinty, well, then that's fine because that's what you're buying. But, you know, if you want a horse with some extended that gets over a little bit more ground, you need some length and scope to them. You know, and I'm a big fan of the shoulder and heart girth. You know, nothing that most people don't look for. I mean, it's that's all you know, pretty basic stuff, but I'm also a big fan of their heads and their eye and kind of their intelligence level. And, you know, because these are like coworkers. I mean, you know, this isn't a one-off thing. I mean, we have to deal with each other every day. You know, he's got to deal with me and I have to deal with him. So, you know, you want to deal with the horse that's not only intelligent, but also accommodating in the sense that they can take the day-to-day training. And, you know, as I'm getting older, I mean, I think I'm getting a little bit more picky about that. I don't know what makes an intelligent horse, but there are some horses you look at sales and you know right away that they're just not generous based upon their head and their eye. And, you know, those are horses I would eliminate very quickly.
Very good. Went through the season and coming off the 2-year-old successes, you knew you were headed to the Triple Crown Trail, and the challenges that presented themselves really from the get-go. Give us a, you know, harken back to the winter and Tampa and the Florida Derby too.
Yeah, I mean, listen, off of the Redstone was a blessing and a curse, because, you know, obviously, you know, it put us on the trail for the Triple Crown. It put us on the Triple Crown Trail, which can be a blessing, you know, but it also can be a bit of a curse in the sense that, you know, if you've got a horse that's developing physically and the timing isn't just so, you know, you're kind of at a little bit of a disadvantage. Now, you know, we were okay with this comeback race in the Sam Davis. We thought, you know, it was a very fast figure. You know, he ran into what turned out to be a very gritty horse in Flame Away, but I was a little discouraged the fact that he didn't just polish it off, you know, and it took him a little while to get over that race, and I'm not so sure that's just because he just wasn't developed enough yet, and that's not something I can control or anybody else. That's Mother Nature, and that's also the beauty of this business, you know. Nature, no matter what happens, and technological advancements, you know, we're all beholden to that, you know, and it's a good thing. You know, the Florida Derby, the horse actually trained stellar going into it, and then we had a one-off gating episode. He had never done it before, and he hasn't done it since. And that was a race we could draw a line through. And, you know, having bled like he did, you know, it also didn't discourage me too much because he finished fourth in a grade one. He didn't finish 12th, and he wasn't beating 100 lengths. You know, he was beating eight, I believe, eight or 12, something in that vicinity. So, you know, but the most important thing is we had the sort of people through Mr. LaPenta and the subsequent partners when we drew up a blueprint for how we wanted to regroup after the Florida Derby. They just did nothing but support us. You know, we all had very, you know, good questions about how we were going to do things. But at the end of the day, we all, you know, came together as a team and knew this was the best thing to do for a horse. And, you know, I love as a horseman the fact that, you know, we took our time, we regrouped, tried to always put him first. And to get rewarded for that, you know, just solidifies kind of how I want to kind of approach this business in the future, which is always being a horse first sort of training operation.
Is there anything physically when you're taking that time between March and June before you come back for the Pennine Ridge, is there anything physically that gives you confidence that whatever contributed to the episode in Florida in the Derby is behind you? How do you gird yourself?
Now, I mean, you know, and this would be a basic bleeding kind of commentary. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a horse, any horse, that at some point in their training career, be it in a race in the afternoon or a morning session, where they haven't bled at some stage. Now, we graded on scale of 1 to 5. It could be a 1, a 1/2, a 4, a 5. And in this case, it was like a 2.5. So it was not horrendous, but it was enough. You know, and it's just exertion. These horses really do what they're trained to do, and they give you everything they have. And sometimes that's a byproduct. When they become chronic, that's when it's a problem. Because it only happened once, I can't even put him in the bleeder category because, to me, a chronic bleeder is one that really bleeds every time you ask anything of them. So in the morning, and that's where Lasix comes in, and then, you know, you can control it via Lasix. Now, in that instance, I mean, we were treating him with the rock-bottom amount of Lasix, and you know, so it's something that can happen. I don't think there was any physical contributors. I've had three horses bleed this year out of all of our runners, and two of them happened the same week at Gulfstream. So maybe there's some sort of climate contributed to, you know, there's a lot of environmental contributors, you know, that are responsible for it too. So, you know, it's a head scratcher and you got to kind of move on. You always keep it in the back of your head from a management standpoint, but you can't let that kind of stuff derail you.
Well, the net result is you get back and you go for the two grass opportunities mid-summer, late spring, early summer, and the really, in a lot of ways, a parallel to what Chuck Lawrence was doing with Glorious Empire, too, going long and less stressful. You know, that was Matt Shearer and Chuck's approach with the Glorious Empire. One thing that was certainly interesting, Jonathan, when you look at where you were through the middle part of the year, all of a sudden, seemingly, he's a horse that ends up on the front end. And fold John Panagot and his role in everything that's gone on, and then, of course, signing on as the agent for Javier Castellano, who is introduced to him, to Catholic Boy.
Well, no, that whole relationship, I mean, I can't say enough about John. He's kind of the unsung hero of this whole team. You know, first is Bob's racing manager. You know, we've subsequently become very good friends, and the good thing about being friends is you can have very open conversations. You can be right, you can be wrong, you can throw a crazy idea out, bounce it off each other, and there's not one decision about this horse that hasn't gone through both of our processors. You know, we've really been a good team, and the addition of Javier to this group has been, I mean, I can't say enough about the guy. He's obviously, a legend in his own time. I mean, you know, there's very few athletes you get to see compete that are actually in the Hall of Fame. You know, you don't get to see that much in football or basketball, but, you know, I always try to remind people, you know, that are fans of this sport, this is a rare sport where you can watch a Hall of Famer day in, day out, apply their trade, and there's none better than Javier, you know, doing it at the moment. So we're proud to be associated with him.
He gets a board, and how much of the change, at least stylistically, him being a horse in the vanguard, how much of that was by design?
Well, it was sitting in the back of my mind, but I really had kind of an epiphany moment in the holding barn at Belmont. You know, I was kind of really just trying. Since we pumped the brakes, we had a chance to kind of reinvent ourselves a little bit. And I was always watching his breezes, and he was always just dragging his rider early. Just, he was settled, but it was controlled. But he just always looked like he was very eager to go. And I rode for a jump trainer called Jack Fisher, and he was always he was always kind of hollering at me about just, you know, don't take away what comes easy to a horse. So if a horse is traveling well and they want to go, I mean, if it is controlled, well, then let them do what they do naturally, and that's run. And I got into the holding barn, and I'm watching all the horses walk around for the Pennine Bridge, and I kind of psyched myself out a little bit about analyze it, and I'm looking at them, and I just felt like we had the best horse physically. And, you know, I went in to the paddock, and I just said, Javier, I don't know about you, man, but I just would like to take it to him, you know, and just see what happens. And he smiled instant, and that's exactly what he wanted to do. And from there on, that's what we've done.
Andy Serling tells that story of Alan Jerkin, right? The Jerkin story about the jock coming back after taking one of Chief's horses back. He said, "You're trying to turn back the clock on a million years of evolution."
That is the greatest way to put it, and only a way that Mr. Jerkin could. But it makes complete sense. I mean, listen, it's you know, it expends energy taking one back as much as it does
absolutely
go forward. And listen, sometimes speed comes in different forms. Sometimes it's front end speed, and sometimes it's a horse that closes. But you know, robbing a horse of what their naturally God given talents are, I think you have to be careful. And listen, I'm as much to blame early on, but there's also the physical difference. You know, when I look at pictures of this horse from 6 months ago, it looked like the difference between LeBron James. I don't know if you saw him play in the McDonald's All-American when he was in high school versus now. They're two different creatures, you know, people. You know, it's just, he was all frame as a high school player, and he's filled out into that frame now, and you see the difference. And that's kind of the best analogy I can give to this horse. He's a different horse. He's put on 300 pounds since January, which is a lot. You know, that's about an eighth of their total weight. You know, so that's a lot of muscle.
Well, and this, what you just said, for those listening, and a lot of you have heard, you know, the whole discussion and the arc of consideration of three-year-olds every year, the Triple Crown Trail and so forth, and, you know, soon they'll be facing elders in the fall. What Jonathan just said explains why you don't let the jury come back after the Belmont Stakes and say, oh, it's a good crop of three-year-olds, it's the worst crop of three-year-olds, because they're all changing, they're all individuals, they are growing until they're five, and what you have in April leading into the Triple Crown season, it, you can just tell from what Jonathan just said, it's got a different horse than he had 6 months ago.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, listen, I am very traditional myself and certainly conservative by nature, but if I could get in a time machine and whoever decided to put the Kentucky Derby in May, if I could have had them put it in September, you know, I think it would make everybody's life that much easier, because, you know, horses would be given that much more time to really be at their best. You know, the Kentucky Derby, I love. I hope we get to participate in at a high level at some stage. But it's a very tough thing to juggle, having a horse at their best from a fitness perspective, and also physically at a point in their development where they're not either behind or too far ahead. And I think that's what makes it so tough. Where, you know, this time of year, you know, the horses would have really come into themselves, because there's been a lot of changes in this particular horse since May, a lot. And if I had the horse I have now back then, you know, we might be having a slightly different discussion.
Well, the discussion we're having is with Jonathan Thomas, who has got a Travers win on his resume going into Saturday. Let's jump from the Belmont Derby win, and now you've got an opportunity to return to the dirt and more or less potentially make a big win bet on a horse and on his value in the Travers, and you know, get this kind of 10 furlong victory at three, the second chance basically at it. And I didn't personally think that he was a candidate for this kind of success, and you had confidence. Anybody that was listening and watching along certainly wouldn't argue with taking the shot, but you were particularly confident. Mike Welch chimed in Friday how well he was training and how well he was moving over the surface, and you echoed that going into Saturday.
No, I mean, listen, we're very one step at a time, and we're methodical, and I don't like making decisions based upon one effort or one breeze. You know, I'm much more interested in a particular body of work for a horse. And you know, when we kind of set out to target the Travers, you know, we really wanted to include Javier in his morning workout. So, you know, we've been very blessed with Tracy, who's been amazing and paramount with this horse. That's his exercise rider. But we felt like Javier could give us, you know, kind of a distinction whether he felt the horse was better on turf or dirt. And every time he came back, he kind of had a big smile and seemed to be very confident. And, you know, the other thing is I'm not sure of much, and I'm never confident in much, but I was very confident going in that the mile and a quarter was his distance. Now, if someone else was better at it, that's their thing. But for us, the trip was going to play in our favor. And the one thing I wanted to work on with this horse is just getting him sharpened up where he would break and put himself in a forward spot. So, you know, we kind of like backtracked, had some sharp works far out, and then kind of just got him geared up to sharpen him up closer to the race. And thankfully he responded well, because he was really kind of just, you know, very fresh and sharp in his reaction. So like when he broke, you know, I just wanted him to be forwardly placed the right way. And Javier, could not have done a better job. It was a brilliant, brilliant piece of race riding that balanced between confidence and assertiveness, but in a very relaxed manner, which turned out just I can't get over the ride. I just thought it was a brilliant piece of riding.
Were you surprised that he and Mendelsohn were were fairly unencumbered on the backstretch? That there were certainly horses in attendance, but there was no probing going on. There was basically the two of you able to, you know, kind of spar gingerly up front, and that really played into the way the second half of the race unfolded.
Oh, there's no doubt. I could have seen four or five other horses in the spot Mendelsohn was in. There were horses that had flashed plenty of speed early in their other races, and, you know, the complexion of what I thought was going to develop was definitely different. And that's why I think sometimes you have to be careful getting too caught up in a game plan and robbing, you know, some of these riders of their gut instinct and just kind of playing it as it comes. Because that's not at all what I thought. Now, believe me, going into the turn, I could not have been happier with what was playing in front of us, because, you know, once they threw up that half mile in 47-2, 47-3, I knew that if he was good enough, he was going to have zero excuse from that positioning.
When did you say to yourself that he's good enough and we're winning this?
When they got to the 5/16th pole, just past that 3/8th pole, you could see Mendelson kind of coming under a drive. And the one thing, like I said, that we had some confidence in was that this is where this particular horse gets stronger because the distance starts to play in its favor. You know, if he had been 10 lengths off the lead at that point in time, I would have been super concerned. You know, but where his positioning was, if something was going to close, they were going to have to work to get there. But, you know, I'd say at about the 3/8th pole, it's just a matter of, like, I just wanted the race to be over because that was the most nail-biting part of it, is just knowing, you know, having that kind of confidence and then just seeing it getting, you know, polished off.
Well, and you have to probably, when you pass the 8th pole, and now you've widened a little bit, there's probably a couple of glances to see if anybody's coming.
You know, at that stage, you know, especially on the dirt, I mean, unless the pace really starts to deteriorate, if his body language was such that he was really starting to be running on fumes and his mechanics were starting to deteriorate because he was getting tired, I think so. But, you know, he just, his ears, and he was flicking his ears around and his body language, I wasn't too concerned. And I would have thought if there was something, it would have been produced probably a little bit earlier.
Well, what was on display was a widening lead, and as we talked yesterday too on TV, it just that part of it was as stunning as any other element of this is how he dispatched this field and able to gain a measure of revenge. It just occurred to me that Mendelson beat him in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. So
he did, you know, and honestly, I thought that was one of this horse's better races. And, you know, we were drawn inside and we got really kind of hemmed up on the first turn, and we went from second to sixth because of some positioning things. And we lost about four lengths on the turn. Now, going a flat mile, I thought maybe it would be a little bit short for us. But the horse came, you know, we were beaten, I think, a length and a half, and galloped out much the best after the wire. That's a race that I would love to have had a redo on, because I'm not so sure we weren't every bit as good on that day. You know, it just was circumstantial, which is often the case.
Well, now a multiple grade one winner in 2018, and a graded stake winner at two, a son of More Than Ready, out of Song of Bernadette, which contributed to the Catholic Boy moniker. The opportunities into the fall, Jonathan, yesterday you mentioned maybe the Hill Prince, maybe the Jockey Club, but the Hill Prince makes plenty of sense as a way to kind of almost relax into the Breeders' Cup.
Well, I think, you know, it's sometimes you want to use a prep as a prep and not as a kind of a gut-wrenching experience, which I can only imagine the Jockey Club Gold Cup is going to play out, especially, you know, with Diversify and, you know, the tremendous form he's in. And then, you know, and you put into account that, you know, at Belmont he's basically unbeatable. I'm not so sure that's a position I'd like to put this horse in at this point in his career. You know, the other option is he's trained extremely well off of break and running fresh into stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't rule out just training him up to the classic if that were the case also. So, you know, so it's just, you know, same deal. You just day by day, week by week, and kind of, you know, see where he takes us. And, you know, hopefully it's to Churchill in November.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, I want you to take a minute to reflect and communicate how much it means to you, and knowing, you know, several years ago at this point when you went on your own, that, you know, this kind of a circumstance and this kind of a win, and to be in this position as a horse trainer was possible and something you envisioned. And it didn't necessarily, Jonathan, come step A, B, C, D, there were, you know, kind of a circuitous route to this, but you always, I think you always quietly knew and had a quiet confidence in yourself that a day like this was going to happen for you.
I mean, listen, you know, it's something we all dream about. I mean, anyone that puts their hand on a horse or raises their hand at a sale, I mean, these are the sort of things you hope can happen at some point. You know, I think if anything, you know, I've definitely learned to trust myself a little bit more over the last couple of years and my instincts and, you know, but the bottom line is that, you know, without the sort of patrons like Mr. LaPenta and the sort of great owners that we've had, and then also, you know, them allowing things to kind of happen, you know, we're nowhere. And, you know, we've been so blessed with the sort of backing and clientele we've had, and everyone's been very patient and trusting in the process, which has been unorthodox. I mean, listen, this horse is, if you really look at his preparation, you know, 90% of it's taken place at a training center in Ocala, which is definitely not the norm, but it works for us. And, you know, for the right horses, or, you know, it seems to do to work. So, you know, we're also blessed to have the facility and kind of the whole team that's behind it. So it's, you know, it takes a thousand things to go right with a horse and only one thing to go wrong to prevent you from getting to this level. So, you know, none of that's lost on us. And, you know, our whole team and our supporters, you know, we're all just humbled by it. And, you know, for it to happen at Saratoga and in New York, which this state has been particularly good to me, you know, through my time with Christoph and Todd and the history, and, you know, just knowing that, you know, all the greats in this big game have run over the same track, and some of them have won that particular race, and, you know, the string of legendary trainers that have come in and out of the barns that we get to occupy here. I mean, it's just, you know, the ghosts, you can kind of feel them here. And, you know, I don't think there's a more special place to win than Saratoga.
Well, when it comes to unorthodox, maybe you had a bit of an edge, considering that your father annually burns down the turf course at Colonial.
That's true. I mean, listen, we're not afraid to try different things. I mean, sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't, but Lord knows you have to try.
Well, and you, I'm going to wonder about that. Are you going to get a chance next summer to, I'm sure, to run down to Colonial and run some horses?
I'd actually love to. I mean, you know, listen, we certainly have, you know, a preponderance of turf horses, which is great, you know. And Colonial has one, if not the best turf course in the country. I mean, I think anyone that's participated there could say the same, and the riders are all super complimentary of it. And it's a shame it's been sitting dormant for a couple of years. But, you know, that's politics, and we can't control that part of it. But, you know, if they get back to where they were, you know, I'd certainly love to send some horses there.
I love it. I want to thank Nick Hahn, by the way, for feeding me that tidbit that your dad's the track super at Colonial. And, tremendous. Well, and so many things came out this weekend. You and Chuck Lawrence went to the same high school. There's the jump jock. You also had the jump jock double in the Sword Dancer at Travers.
No, I mean, I stopped Chucky and I just said, can you imagine, you know, the two of us coming from a one-stoplight town in Virginia, you know, going to the same school. And believe it or not, and I've told him this 100 times, I used to cut out pictures of Chucky when I was a little kid and hang them on the wall, because I think the one thing that gets probably overlooked, he was a seriously good rider. And he was probably one of the best, if not the best, domestic steeplechase jockey that we've ever had. I mean, if you go back and look at pictures, he was a beautiful, beautiful, effective rider. And he was kind of a hero of mine when I was a kid. But, you know, we have it's a small place, you know, in Virginia that's just horse mad. I mean, everybody there is horses 24/7, and it's a great place to grow up and get a good, strong foundation. And, you know, I also love seeing him, you know, get these sort of opportunities too, because he's a very good horseman, you know, and it was a great double, you know.
Absolutely. Now, Jonathan, just thrilled for you and everybody involved here, and of course Bob LaPenta, who's contributed a tremendous amount to the game, Sol Kumin partnered in, and Sienna Farm, and Randy Gulat, and the Twin Creeks team, and it's a just a great ownership group, and a lot to look forward to as we move from summer to fall, and a lot to look forward to for the Jonathan Thomas Racing Stables. And you can follow Jonathan on Twitter.
My brother's on there right now putting pictures. So
there you go. Perfect.
That's definitely one of my weaknesses. So we've delegated that part of our stable out. So he's doing a great job.
Thomas Stables, to follow Jonathan, and you can congratulate him, and you can tell him how much money you won on Catholic Boy Jonathan. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Steve. You know, I'm a huge fan, and I know you work really hard at this, and we all appreciate it, so thank you.
Not at all. Jonathan Thomas, and I've had the privilege to know Jonathan a long time now, and the whole time that, you know, I was on the track from Saratoga, and followed his, you know,
his interesting career course, and there was never any point when you would have doubted that Jonathan would, you know, get when the time came when he'd have an opportunity with a horse like this, that he would convert it into the kind of success they're enjoying. And you know, a lot of people going back to the spring when they were talking about, you know, Derby horses and the Triple Crown events and who can win, and, you know, questioned whether a Jonathan Thomas is going to, you know, navigate these, you know, these shores. And there's your answer, a resounding yes. Let's take a timeout, and bottom of the hour, we got Bob Baffert and Mike Beer yet to come. So stay with us. Back after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 25 minutes to fill out what's been the predictably enjoyable Monday after a big Saturday. And we are, you know, getting close, obviously, to closing out the summer boutique meets. And this was a great way, frankly, to perk up what has been, I think for a lot of people, a frustrating summer. Let's be honest. The weather tormented not just fans and horse players, but the horsemen and owners. This is and management. I mean, this is hard when you know you had what we have dealt with. So to have a big banner day like Saturday was really particularly enjoyable. And you want to talk about a banner weekend, one person that had a particularly good few days, pretty good Friday, Saturday at Saratoga was Bob Baffert. Bob, did you have a good weekend? A red jacket? You came home with a nice addition to the wardrobe and then a couple of trophies.
It was actually a very, we started out, we went to Louisville, and I got inducted in the Kentucky Athletic Hall of Fame, and that was really a lot of fun. And then, we flew up there, got the red jacket, and that was pretty humbling thing to get in that little elite group there, and got my red jacket, and so, and then I. You know, Chris Kay, he's done such a great job there, you know, started that thing. So I didn't, luckily my horses ran well, so I can keep the red jacket.
Yeah, once you're in, I think you, now, thing is, now they're going to expect you to come and sit, you know, and be part of that group every year. You got to bring a horse or two.
I don't have a problem with that. That's a great group. That's a hell of a group right there. So I was. It was pretty nice. The fans are great too, and you know they just so that makes it. And Wayne Lucas, he was it's so kind of his word. Wayne's the best. So I told him to fluff me up as big much as he could. He did a good job.
Then came the opportunity in the afternoon, and you had Abel Tasman coming back to New York, and had performed just smashingly in the Phipps and Marley's Freedom. Let's talk about the personal ensign and your thoughts on the performance, and then a little bit of had to sweat out a little bit of a steward glance.
Yeah, well, the performance was by those two mares was pretty. I mean, that was a horse race, and we knew I knew we had to go out there to. You know, if you want that championship, I know if we hadn't gotten out there and the late wins by eight, they'd be calling her the next coming. So we had to take her on, and find out. And I mean, I think that was one of the most exciting races of the day there. And I'm just glad I was on the winning end of it. But there was a performance by the two best fillies out there, and they got to throw it down. You know, they got to. That's what I love about racing. They prove it on the racetrack, and so, and unfortunately, I didn't know about the the bumping incident, because I didn't see it during the race until they came back. I saw objection. They started showing, you know. But, you know, the more you look at it, you know, I asked Mike, I go, he says, well, that long stretch, it's so long, that stretch. He said that these jockeys, they want to engage their horse, and he saw her way out there, so he wanted to get her up there close to her so she could see her, so she could engage the filly. Because she was, like, you know, sort of stopping on him. And I think Ortiz, he did the same thing, but what they did, they just did it simultaneously, and that's why they came and hit. But it looked like Abel got the worst of it, because that big mare, it's huge, you know. And it's too big. You know, I don't like to see objections. I hate that kind of stuff. But I like the way our mare just was just going to go, and, you know, she wasn't going to get by us, you know. But it was a great race. I mean, we turned for home. I mean, late, you know, she had the whole stretch to get by. You know, she was just that. Abel, she's just a great mare. You know, I've always thought that. And she showed up. You know, she shipped all the way there, you know, and laid it down, you know. And so, you know, that was, those are two great. I mean, that was a pre Breeders' Cup right there, filly and mare. I mean, those are all good mares.
There was a little speculation, I guess, from Bill Mott yesterday that she might even, the late might even head toward 10 furlongs. Meanwhile, you're going to come back with Abel. She's doing a fair amount of traveling, obviously. She's been to Churchill, then to Belmont, now here. Going to stay at home preparing for the distaff?
Yeah, I'll keep her here. I'm not sure if I'll run her again until the Breeders' Cup. You know, that's hard. When you're Shep and you run that hard, they went fast. They went 147.
Yep.
I mean, they went a mile and 34. I mean, those mares, that was pretty impressive. I mean, they're two, you know, unbelievable mares. And, you know, I can see Bill Mott's frustration afterwards, because he really thought, you know, he's going to win the race. You know, his mare couldn't be doing any better, and she, you know, and mine was doing great. So it's like, you know, it's frustrating, because we're all competitive, you know. But it was a great race, and, like, you know, they'll meet again. I'm sure they'll meet again in the distance.
I should note, and you talked about how fast they ran and how hard. You know, she had the triple-digit buyer for the first time in the FIPS. This was a big jump off of that, a 105 buyer in here.
Well, I should have been higher than that. I think the 105, that sounds a little weak. It's fast.
Man, you're unbelievable.
That's wildcat. Those are nice fillies. They're being by nine. I mean, that's like.
That's a big. That's a big number.
I didn't need a buyer to. You know, that was a horse race. They those mares, they threw it down.
Oh, there's no doubt. My point is that you training up. I won't argue if you want to give her, you know, plenty of time to come off of that effort and build back up for the distaff. I mean, absolutely.
Well, I like her to come back and run well in the distaff, because, you know, it's all, you know, what she's done. You know, I like the, you know, the championship honors are on the line, the Breeders' Cup, you know.
Yep.
It's all going to be right there. So,
well, now
she's in a position to be for, but, you know, I just want to make sure I'm competitive on the Breeders' Cup day, and a lot can go on, you know, it's different, you know, it was a great day. I mean, it was fun to be there. The weather was perfect. And to me, the best part about Saratoga is, like, the mornings watching the horses train, the people out there, and the trees and the barns, and, you know, it's just, you know, the atmosphere is just, it's incredible. And so, I just feel really fortunate that our horses ran well, and they, And Marley's Freedom, I mean, man.
Talk about her.
Getting so good, you know. And we felt really good about her. And but you know what? The fans, they made both a favorite. So they had it.
Talk a little bit about this filly. She's by Blame, and looks like she's just getting better and better.
Yeah, and the you know, Barbara Perry, she's going to she wants to run her next year also, and we're going to we're thinking, you know, maybe not this year, but later. I like to stretch her out. I think she can stretch out. I mean, she's fast. I mean, well, at some time or another, we'll give her, we'll try her out, you know, but I think she can stretch out.
Well,
but she's a classy, I mean, they're both those girls. They just get good temperament. They ship well. They handle everything really well. So I probably won't run her back to the filling mare sprint.
Well, and I was going to say, because with these three wins, with the Desert Stormer, the Great Lady M, and now the Ballerina, the Grade One, she's put three big efforts back to back to back.
Yeah, so that's, you know, and like I said, we'd like to get, you know, have her ready for the, you know, I'd like to go into Churchill Downs, you know, with a chance to win, because it's, you know, it's exciting to win a Breeders' Cup race. So that's our goal right now.
A couple of quick notes, Bob, before we go. Yesterday, the New York bred out of the 2-year-old sale, Tale of the Union, with a terrific debut.
Yeah, I mean, he really, you know, I was thinking about bringing him to Saratoga and then run him in the New York bred there, but he was doing so well here, I thought I'd better just go ahead and run him here. But he was pretty impressive, ran really well. Heard he got a 91 buyer or something. So
nice. This is, of course, for the owner of More Spirit, Michael Lund Peterson.
Michael Lund, he after the Preakness, he said, "You know, Bob, I want to buy another horse. This watching this you guys win the Derby and the Preakness got me all excited." I said, "So well, there's a sale 10 minutes away from your house." Come on over. So he bought him, and he was really excited. So
$925 for him. And
yeah, he was. He looked worth it yesterday. I mean, you can, it's not what you get for him, is what they do once you start him. But yeah, he was tipping himself in the mornings here. So I'm just thankful that he showed up, because sometimes you can buy him, give a lot of money, they don't show it. But I have a lot of luck out of Timonium, you know. I like the fact that they work on the dirt, you know, and that makes a big difference.
Well, and did you take Michael to
Michael's? He looks fast too.
Did you take Michael Lund to Michael's for crab cake?
No, I wasn't there. I left. So I left Donato with him. Donato was in charge.
Nice. Well, we should also mention that since we're on the 2-year-old kick, how about the 1-2 finish the other day, Fighting Mad and Honey from the South?
Yeah, that was Turn for Home. That was a good race. Those fillies ran really, really well. You know, Fighting Mad, you know, she's really quick, and I knew she was going to be. They sort of had the same. You know, I was afraid they're going to burn each other up early, but they hooked each other, and they made it. I was sort of hoping for a dead heat there. It almost was, but you know, they ran really well.
Well, and just as you promised earlier this summer, you said you were taking your time, and that a lot of the 2-year-olds would show up, you know, late in the Del Mar meet. That includes some other horses. You had that the horse of Zayats, I think, is older, right? Super Sol.
Yeah, he ran really well the other day, and he came out of it. We've always had high hopes for him, so he's doing really well. So, but it's fun getting all these 2-year-olds ready, and you know, we're getting that. We don't want to have to deal with that Pegasus. I'm not the Pegasus. The Apollo curse. Get that out of the way. You know.
Well, you've already buried that.
Yeah, but that's because of the horse. I don't know if I'll ever have that horse like that beast. You know, I think only a horse like that can do it. You know, but he was. But it was a great day. I was happy for Robert LaPenta, Catholic boy. He was so excited. You know, he was. You know, he deserves something like that. So it was a great day. You know, I mean, the racing card was just phenomenal.
Yep,
it was just one big race after another. I just love that. You know, it was like I felt like I was at like one of the classics. You know, the atmosphere, the people, everybody. It was just really. And then when you can win on those big days, it just makes you really. You know, that's why you're in it. That's why Barbara Parrish, he was just overwhelmed by it. I said, man, this is so huge. That was a first grade one. And I said, well, you won it at the right place because it's pretty, you know, it means a lot when you win in Saratoga. So.
Well.
But, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, you know. Sometimes you go up there and you know, it doesn't work. But we're gonna go back next week. We're going to send some back for the next weekend there. So hopefully we'll do well.
Oh, Bob, I really appreciate it, of course. And while you're with us, I had not seen it until, and I'm just getting word now, John Asher has passed.
Oh, wow. I was just with him the other night.
Marty McGee. Wow. Marty McGee just
that's horrible.
Let the news out here that died suddenly this morning.
Man, yeah, I was just with him Wednesday night at this function, and he actually looked, you know, he's lost weight. And he actually looked good. You just got to count your blessings. I mean, that is. Man, he is just like, he's Mr. Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, it won't.
He's Mr. Churchill Down. Wow, that's very sad.
I'm sorry to do this, Bob. Let me wish you luck this week as we close out Del Mar, and you got Futurity Horses, of course, coming up there, and it's been a great summer. We'll undoubtedly talk as early as next week.
All right, man. Well, thanks,
Bob. Bob Baffert, everybody, and we got to take a break.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, less than 10 minutes to close out this Monday. That was initially, obviously, a celebration of tremendous achievements on the racetrack over the weekend, and is going to conclude here in a very subdued manner with this news of John Asher at the age of 62 passing suddenly this morning, and a absolute an institution for anyone who has any dealings with the with Derby and with the Churchill Downs, synonymous the old Hilltopper himself. And Marty McGee joins us, who helped spread this word. And Marty, I needed to break to compose myself. I just absolutely just devastating piece of news.
Yeah, apparently John died either last night or this morning. Even Darren Rogers, the Churchill spokesman who's handling this, and is as stunned as the rest of us, Steve, said it's not known when he died, but he did die apparently of a heart attack while on a family vacation in Orlando, Florida. You know, John was a doting grandfather of two. Yeah, I don't know if I can do this, Steve.
I know.
John's first Eclipse Award in 1988 came when he came up. Actually, that was with the his first one was for the Breeders' Cup coverage for the old Wave radio. The second one was on, he drove up to Laurel in his own car, interviewed me and my brother about a good horse my brother had, and that was his second Eclipse Award. So we go back 30 years, and I actually got the news from my mom. She called me this morning and said, did you hear about John Asher dying? And she had some connections with her, one of the hospitals here in Louisville, who evidently got word. And I didn't want to put it out on Twitter, but Terry Miners, who's extremely popular here in Louisville as a radio personality, had something out there. So I felt it was okay to go ahead and you know, just let people know that John, unfortunately, has died. And, you know, there are no words for what a great guy he was. It's just,
no.
John called me when Luke died. John called me when a guy named John Harrelson died. When Cliff Williams died, John called me. And this is just terrible.
You know, so often, you know, the first person that you would seek out. I mean, over the years, and my own experience at Churchill, and you know, it was the person that had to, on so many occasions, make sense of things that that were confounding others, and he did it with good cheer. But if you needed something, if you you know, if you needed encouragement or direction on anything, John Asher was the go-to, and it will be a long time, Marty, before without him, it just won't be the same there, period.
Yeah, you know, this is how much John loved horse racing and the Derby. He was 7 times named by the Associated Press the best reporter in Kentucky as a radio reporter. And he said, you know what, I've got a good... He could have been the main guy on the biggest station in Louisville, WHAS. He most likely could have had the, you know, one of the main slots on their drive shows. And but he said, you know what, I love Churchill Downs. I love the Derby. I can't stand it anymore. I got to go to work for him. He went to work for Churchill in January of 97. And, you know, as he was just a joyful face of racing, and portrayed all the things you would want out of somebody who, you know, who could convey that love for racing the way he did. And it's a sad day for all of us.
Very much. And obviously we'll hear from countless admirers and colleagues the next couple of days and provide details. Marty, I'm sure you'll handle the obit.
It's already up on the forum, you know, what we know. Ignore the Monday morning, because we don't know if it was Monday morning. I'm trying to get that deleted.
Immaterial.
Yeah.
Immaterial.
Yeah.
Marty McGee.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it.
I'm glad there was only 8 minutes to fill out here. I'm sure Darren will join us tomorrow, and Kevin Flannery and whoever else. Kate and Bradar will be, I know Kate will be heading back to, they're heading back to, she and Doug, we saw them Saturday, or was that yesterday? Yesterday. I'm losing track. No, Saturday. They're heading back, of course, to Kentucky. Kentucky Downs will have their first draw tomorrow. Wow. All right. Want to thank Dale Romans and Ron Moquette, Johnny D, Jonathan Thomas for just a wonderful half hour, Bob Baffert, Marty. I apologize to Mike Beer, who was ready for us and we couldn't get to. My opinions are up at the website for today for the Pick 6 carryover, and we'll continue coverage from the weekend tomorrow, 9 a.m. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Good luck today, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free t-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.